This is Robert Itis welcoming you to Plants and Their Friends on WART FM 95.5, broadcasting from the caboose in downtown Marshall on Main Street. And today I have a guest.
I'm Peter Waskevich from the Plant and Gather Forest Farm.
And we're going to talk a lot about the United Plant Savers and how this organization has come into our lives and how, in some ways, it's helped frame our lives. There was, for me, a beginning back in the 90s when I was coming out of real estate and going into plants. And one of the things that I always felt strongly about was Golden Seal. It was a heart plant for me, one of my allies that I felt really strongly about. Now, Rosemary Gladstar, who started United Plant Savers, she originally was started in California and then moved to Sage Mountain in Vermont. And it was from there that she started the United Plant Savers. She also has a international herbal symposium every 2 years that's up in Massachusetts, not that far away from Vermont. And she was contacted by Paul Strauss down in Ohio, Rutland, Ohio, down from Athens. And he had purchased a huge tract of land and kept mining or reclaiming mined land. And there's a DVD out on him telling his story of that part of his life. And he convinced Rosemary, and he brought on a friend of his who was the executive director, Richard, and they started out. And Rosemary at that time was a big proponent of the company out in Iowa, Frontier Herbs, and she was on their staff. And she got them to put out a bumper sticker that said, Save the Golden Seal. That became the symbol for the United Plant Savers then, and is that today?
Yeah, the United Plant Savers is a fantastic organization. Like Robert was saying, it was started by some of the pioneers of the herbal industry in response to the declining populations of some of the most popular plants, namely Golden Seal and Ginseng. And they were some of the people who popularized Western herbalism in the late 60s and through the 70s and 80s, they felt somewhat responsible for the some of the declining populations and wanted to start to educate people about the endangered plants and also about the endangered wild plants and really start to teach people how to cultivate some of these plants, namely the ginseng and golden seal, which are, you know, have really sensitive climates that they like to grow in. They're a little tricky to cultivate, so there was a learning curve that went on over the last few decades, and Robert was a big part of that with working with the ginseng and golden seal. So they have this mission. Their mission is to protect native medicinal plants of the United States and Canada and their native habitat while ensuring an abundant, renewable supply of medicinal plants for our future generations to come. And some of the work that they do is identifying which plants are at risk. So they have a list of at-risk plants. They have a list of what's the next one? The at-risk plants, the to-watch plants, and
plants that are having problems.
Yeah.
And some of these populations are still, especially in our area, abundant, but in other places they don't exist anymore. And so that's when all of this stepped in. We have to put it in context of the fact that in 1977 we had the CITES Treaty signed, and ginseng was put on that list and became now recognized by internationally that this is a problem. I was with the United Plant Savers. I used to go up to Ohio quite often and taught up there. I also had a situation where I would take some of the slippery elm trees that they were propagating and had them down here. So there were different reasons why I'd be up there. And I was there when first Sage Mountain became a native botanical sanctuary, and then Ohio. The Golden Seal Sanctuary became the second native botanical sanctuary. So I was right there when that happened that weekend, and I stood up and had Eagle Feather Organic Farm as the third native botanical sanctuary in their system. And that's where we sit today. Now, one of the things that United Plant Savers produces is a document. We're going to talk about this a couple of times today, but it's the Journal of Medicinal Plant Conservation. It's a United Plant Savers publication, and it's one of the work that they do on a annual basis. This one's the spring. They may do this semi-annually, and in it there's the at-risk and to-watch list that they put in there, but they also have a whole section on different communities that are part of that networking situation. Places like Herb Farm and Shaw Black Farm, Northern Kentucky, and also Eagle Feather. And there are reports of what was happening at your farm the last year that are put into those books. So it is important to have these native botanical sanctuaries around in case the populations continue to plummet. And now I'd like to turn it over to Peter to tell you, so he could tell you the process that they went through to become a native botanical sanctuary here in Madison County.
Yeah, so I have been following United Plant Savers since it began at some point in the 90s. And when I moved here to North Carolina, my partner Sierra Foley, who runs the Appalachian School of Holistic Herbalism, she has a property out in Madison County on the Leicester side that she applied for a botanical sanctuary, and I helped her establish that. In that process, and then and just recently we purchased a property in Madison County along the Big Laurel Creek, and is a large tract with that's mostly forested, and it's filled with lots of native endangered plants, and so we went through the process of applying to the United Plant Savers, and they were very happy to receive us. So we just recently got our signs in the mail that we'll be posting around the property saying that this land is being managed to preserve endangered native plants and wildlife, and basically not to removing any plants without permission. Some of the work that people who join the Native Sanctuary Network, they're wanting an educational component to go along with it. And so we're going to be starting to do classes teaching people how to propagate natives, how to create habitats to support healthy native plant populations, and all the things that go along with that. Plan at the Plant and Gather Forest Farm is we'll be cultivating wild plants in the forest. We'll also have a nursery for edible and wild native plants, and we'll be wildcrafting from the forest there. The way we're arranging the business is a community-supported forest agriculture where people can purchase a membership and then be able to come and we deliver produce from the gardens, we harvest herbs from the forest, we make added value medicinal products all for our members, and then we also have camping available on the property and many different workshops focused generally on a forest agriculture type of curriculum. And at the heart of that, of course, is native plants and trees and all the uses therein.
Right. This is great. I hope some people are inspired to do likewise. I think that the hardest part for a lot of people is opening up their place to strangers with the educational component. And if that is not high on your list, then having a native botanical sanctuary designation by the United Plant Savers wouldn't necessarily be possible.
Yeah, and it fit right in with what we're doing. We got this piece of land that is 80% forested, and so we had to figure out how to do an agriculture in a mostly shaded forested area. So the land really called for forest farming. And also agritourism is a very important aspect for us getting going financially. So the workshops and having people come out and camp and being able to teach all that we're doing with the plants and propagating the plants and how to use them, and kind of jumping on this bandwagon that's been growing for the last several years that's very popular is foraging and wild native foods. It's kind of the new organic, the way that I see it, and there's a lot of chefs and markets that are looking for wild cultivated foods and wild harvested foods in preference to a cultivated organic produce. For instance, we have loads of wood nettles in the property, and the way I see it, that's the most benign type of agriculture. We don't have to cultivate, we don't have to buy seed, we don't have to fertilize. This crop comes up every year. So one of our goals and missions is to educate people about how the wood nettles is, the way I see it, it's like terrestrial seaweed. It's super nutritious, high in chlorophyll, 10 times more nutritious than spinach or kale, and it just grows on its own. So we're trying to educate the chefs and different markets around to try and replace some wild foods with the cultivated foods that are so costly to the environment, beginning with the cultivation that washes the soil away.
Right. That always gets me to a permaculture principle of building on top of the soil and not digging into it. which is really important. Well, let's get back here again to the United Plant Savers, because there's one thing that they have on their website, which is UnitedPlantSavers.org, and they, I don't know if it's sensitive that the U, the P, and the S are capitalized like on their brochure, but it is one word. They do have a survey about ginseng to join on to express your concern about that. The sanctuary does have upcoming events. You can schedule a tour. This is the Golden Seal Botanical Sanctuary in Rutland, Ohio. And, you know, you can contact them at office@UnitedPlantSavers.org. They have an intern program, like a lot of farms have. And they also have a lot of programs that they sponsor around the country, too, called Planting the Future. So we have a workshop that is coming up, but before I get to that, let's talk about a couple of opportunities, golden opportunities in the Asheville area to join some people who are, I think, on the cutting edge. And the first group that I can think of, Jeffrey from Madison County is on it, but the main push of it is Zeb Friedman and Frank Patrick Battle and Fanny's Farm are get together, and they do a little bit of working, and they do a little bit of sharing. There's opportunity to do some vision questing of what the organization should really do right now. It's like in its third or fourth season in the Asheville area. And I would encourage anybody who wants to be part of that to get in contact with Zeb Friedman. He should be pretty easy to find on a Google.
That's the Agroforestry Cooperative? That's getting together and meeting regularly. Yeah, that's a really great group, and it's really expanding and spreading the knowledge and practices of forest farming. And forest farming is fantastic because what it does is it's utilizing forests that were just previously thought of as a woodlot or for hunting, whereas many people sometimes think of, if they have a large forest, that it's kind of a liability, like it's something that you have to put a lot of work into for it to be beautiful. But what we're presenting with forest farming is different alternatives that people can potentially get some income out of their forest from non-timber forest products, rather than just doing a clear cut every 20 years.
Oh yeah, that's absolutely true, that if you harvest what's in your forest, especially if you have hardwoods under the north-facing slope, you can easily beat out on a regular rotation, harvesting at the prices where herbs are not really given the benefit of the doubt, you can beat out your logging prices every single time. So it never pays to cut your trees except in a thinning process, and usually you want to think about what you're going to do with that lumber before you cut it. And then that becomes really important to start to take away the ability of the forest to be a liability and turning it around to try and be a plus for you. And it can do that. The other group that we want to talk about is the Nutty Buddy group.
Yeah,
talk about them.
The Nutty Buddy Collective is a group who's been working the last 4 or 5 years basically to help us come up with the equipment and the know-how and the network to be able to harvest nuts from our native trees. And what they've done is they've purchased some processing equipment. And so, for instance, we were able to harvest 200 pounds of black walnuts. We cleaned the husks off at home, and we brought them down, and we're able to pour 5-gallon buckets through their cracker that completely separates the meats from the shell. And that saves an enormous amount of time compared to beating on the shells one at a time with a hammer. And so we pour in a 5-gallon bucket, we get a 5-gallon bucket out in just a few seconds, and then you just pick out the shells. And that is something that takes black walnut from being something that somebody could easily process just a few pounds a year to where you could process several pounds and start to use black walnuts as a staple in your diet. So they are processing the black walnuts where you can bring them in, and then they take a percentage of the harvest and give you back the meats. And they also are making flour out of the white oak and all the different delicious and nutritious uses of white oak and white oak acorns. And then another main thing that they're really pioneering is pressing oils out of the red oak and hickory nuts, and specifically the bitternut hickory is a super nutritious oil that has a high temperature rating, and it's turning out to be a great superfood. So what they're able to do with that, they have a press to make oil, and you can bring down hickory nuts that you harvest, and they have a guaranteed price. They'll just buy those outright from you and press it into oil, and they're creating markets for that. So what we're finding is that these tree crops are starting to utilize them for staple crops, for flour from the white oak and oils, that all important missing link in a sustainable diet is being able to produce enough oil, not just for our nutrition, but for the utility of cooking with oil. That seems to be one of the challenges for a truly sustainable regional diet. So we're starting to address that through tree crops and the fantastic work that the Nutty Buddy Collective
is doing. Like to mention Bill.
Mm-hmm. Bill Whipple.
Bill Whipple. He is, bring him into this circle, because that person is off the chart, totally off the chart.
Yeah.
And I think all of the people that are part of this group are very, very, very loving, caring people who are on this planet and would be really great people to know. The ages are middle age or lower, younger kids. So I, as an elder, stand out in the crowd. But Pat Battle is another elder that's part of that. Doug Elliott is another elder that's part of that group that I've met. And I wanted to also mention, before I turn it back over to Peter, is that the Nutty Buddy Collective was at the Organic Growers School. And if you didn't slide by there to pick up some nuts, really well-priced, extremely reasonable for what you get. I was very impressed. And I'm now, because I do, as I mentioned before, a protein vegetable diet, I am now adding nuts into the stir fry, mm-hmm. chopped up, and that taking, you know, the cooking to another level, which is interesting. And the Nutty Buddy Collective is a great group, great bunch of people doing some good stuff. And I wanted to applaud them for helping in this sustainability that's so hard to achieve right now. We can see that the United Plant Savers are also a part of that whole situation. I will also mention at this point, we're coming up to halfway, that this is the United Plant Savers segment of Plants and Their Friends. Robert Itis and
Peter Waskevich
are here to talk about them. And what started us off was the Native Botanical Sanctuaries, which both of our farms now are designated. I would want to encourage everybody to become a member of the United Plant Savers, and it's a $35 for the year. And they really do some of, they're really the organization for plants out there. You get a lot of organizations that are for trees, different types of trees, and then we have organizations for animals and different types of them. But this is really the one organization for in the United States for being proactive in our plant communities, which I believe is the way that we're going to see ourselves through. Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, carrying on with the back to the Nutty Buddy Collective. I just want to make sure that everyone knows how to get a hold of them. They have a great website, thenuttybuddycollective.com. You can check out and see how to take advantage of using their harvesting and processing equipment when the nut harvest comes around. And you could support their work. I'm sure they have a way that you can become a member and or support their work and invest in a perennial sustainable agriculture that they're promoting.
Yeah, if nothing else, you can buy some of these nuts that they produce to keep them going.
Yeah, and then you were mentioning Bill Whipple before. I believe that he was the founder of another project that is primarily focused on the acorns. It's called the Acornucopia Project, and you can find out more about them at acornucopiaproject.com. And again, these are just fantastic very utilitarian organizations that are really going to make the difference of turning tree crops from a hobby, a backyard hobby of harvesting a few handfuls or a few buckets of nuts, and really bring them, elevate them up into a staple crop. And I don't have to mention that the reason why tree crops are so fantastic and amazing is you only have to plant them once. And then you're going to be harvesting them for many, many decades in the future. Therefore, you don't require to, there's no herbicides needed to keep the weeds down. Trees do that on their own. They provide their own nutrition. They provide our oxygen, and they contribute to the water to keep themselves irrigated. So it's a self-maintaining perennial agriculture that is really going to make the difference in a long-term sustainability. There's another great group that started out of, I believe, in Virginia, and they have, their project is the Beginning Forest Farm Coalition, and that is, just like you'd imagine, people who are interested in getting involved with forest farming, and they have some incredible workshops and conferences that they put on. They're putting together a lot of different studies on the different non-timber forest plants and products that people are starting to produce in their forest and create alternatives to logging and real estate pressures that are impacting our forest around here. And they just really hit the ground running in the last few years. And they had a great conference down in Black Mountain that I was sorry that I missed. I believe you took part in that, Robert.
Yeah, we were down there selling sprouted ginseng seeds. One of the offshoots of that Virginia situation is our North Carolina State Extension. And, of course, they're located in Fletcher. And the lady who is in charge of that program for North Carolina is Margaret Bloomquist. Lovely lady who put that Black Mountain program on. And I also met with some of the people of that group up in West Virginia. The United Plant Savers had a conference on ginseng and woodland botanicals, and the proceedings of that are out now, so you could get it, including with yours truly having a section on natural fungicides. Mark Williams spoke. There were a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Of course, Susan, who's the executive director of the United Plant Savers right now, she put on a fabulous conference. And the first time that we had everybody come to the table, including, well, the university and the government were fairly easy to get to. But the ginseng dealers and harvesters are the hardest ones to get. And they were there in good numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, so it seems like Appalachia is in the forefront of forest agriculture in North America, and that just is directly related to the diversity that is thriving in this forest. We have more, in southern Appalachia, we have more plants and trees and insect varieties than any other deciduous forest in the world. There are climates in parts of China that are temperate hardwood forests that are very similar in diversity to ours, but it just lends itself to a forest agriculture where we derive a lot more value from an intact whole forest rather than just cutting the trees down. It's a complicated long-term process to establish perennial agriculture, but these incredible groups like the Beginning Forest Farm Coalition are there to help people get started. And you can find them through the AppalachianForestFarmers.com is their website. And I'm going to go back and say again, the a cornucopia project that primarily is working with acorns, the work of Bill Whipple, and that's out of Asheville. Their website is the cornucopiaproject.com. And then again, that Nutty Buddy Collective that has the processing equipment where you can bring your nuts in and process it and get your black walnuts cracked or oil pressed from red oaks and support their work there. You can find them at the NuttyBuddyCollective.com.
That's great. To continue on with contacts, the Eagle Feather Organic Farm will have a workshop on Sunday from 1 to 4 that I'll teach on how to grow ginseng and golden seal. And this setting, Eagle Feather Farm, is a forest environment, and we will explore this rich Appalachian hardwood cove where these plants live and see baby ginseng. The class will include hands-on training with the newly sprouted plants. And the cultivation of native medicinal plants as a new business opportunity will be mentioned. New marketing strategies and organizations will be highlighted, and current events and programs will be shared. One of the things that I did want to mention is a program that just happened called the Ginseng Auction, which the North Carolina Ginseng Association put on. And one of our sponsors was United Plant Savers, and another sponsor was Red Moon Herbs. The North Carolina Ginseng Association, we would encourage you to look at. You can join it for just $15. We are looking for some people who have an ability to be a good treasurer or vice president. But the Ginseng Auction brought together dry ginseng in different forms and shapes, in different grades, as well as products, value-added products, including ginsengs in alcohol to make tinctures, ginseng leaf, ginseng in honey, different types of elixirs from Red Moon Herb with ginseng. It was quite an evening down at Fifth Season Gardening Center this last Saturday. If you missed it but would like to get on the next auction, which will be in November, please go to the Facebook page, North Carolina Ginseng Association, and indicate that you would like to be coming to the next auction. The person there is Jessica Larson, who you'll be communicating with, and we would love to have you. Growing ginseng in Madison County is one of the things that ginseng really likes this county. And I think it does really, really well. So at the workshop on April 15th, from 1 to 4, we're going to see a video on how to grow ginseng. And we'll learn the history of ginseng and golden seal, tips and secrets, and down and dirty herbal wisdom will be shared from the soil to the harvest. We also will be identifying companion plants and trees. There will be ginseng plants and golden seal plants available at my farm starting April 15th. And we would encourage people to come over. For those people who haven't seen us ever, this is our 25th year. Come on by. We'll also want to mention that Peter is going to have a farm tour.
Yeah.
When is that, Peter?
On April 8th, Sunday, April 8th, we'll be having folks out to the Plant and Gather Forest Farm. And you can find out about that at plantandgatherforestfarm.com. What we're doing is a forest farm tour once a month, and people can come out and take a look at this new project. We just moved onto the property last June, so right now we're setting up systems. We have chickens and ducks going in. We're building a new greenhouse. We're reclaiming pastures. We're doing botanical surveys on the whole property to really see what the makeup of the plant and tree populations are, and see which ones at this stage that we can be doing some wildcrafting of, which ones we need to propagate more of and work with the populations in the forest. But we do this forest farm tour, and we start down at the bottom. At the bottom of the property is 2,300 feet, and we hike up to 3,600 feet up at the top ridge and take a look at the whole property and talk about the vision of the Plant and Gather Forest Farm and community-supported forest agriculture. It's a lot of fun. We have a meal at the end of the hike, and everyone's welcome of all abilities. The hike up to the ridge is for the most hardy hikers. But then if we have folks that aren't up for the task of going all the way to the top, we do we split the tour in two so people can take a look at some of the lower elevation areas and for folks that aren't quite ready to go all the way to the top. But that's at April 8th at 11 a.m. at the Plant and Gather Forest Farm. And you can see that at plantandgatherforestfarm.com. Just click on events and click on and check out the rest of the website and see what the vision is for our project out there.
Okay. Well, we're wishing you well for all of the activities coming up. We do want to mention that with your $35, you get a journal of medicinal plant conservation from the United Plant Savers. Just some of the things that happened in the spring of 2017 is Eagle Feather Organic Farm is got a page devoted to it on page 29. And then there's Botanical Sanctuaries. They don't tell you how many there are here, but it sure looks like a lot of them.
I believe there's in the 70s. There's 70 different botanical sanctuary networks in North America. Yeah. I guess there's a few in Canada. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's only three in Canada.
Yeah, and none in Mexico. So it's the North American Botanical Sanctuary Network. And those are farms that are just committed to protecting endangered plants in their habitat and educating people about that and practices of propagating and ethical wildcrafting. You know, that term, I believe, came from United Plant Savers. That was the first time I ever heard of it, the concept of ethical wildcrafting, and that has now become synonymous with the herbal medicine industry, that we just don't go out and take, you know, unlimited amounts of from any given population, that we really address it consciously and have an understanding of what that population is and of that particular plant and try and just harvest accordingly so that we're not hurting the population. And you know, kind of the concept between the name and the Plant and Gather Forest Farm, our project, is to do just that, that we're not just gathering and collecting herbs, that we want to be planting and gathering too. So we'll be, we can spend some time harvesting and we can spend some time spreading some seeds. We can spend some time cultivating some roots and spreading those in the forest. And we can also bring some plant material back and start it in our greenhouse and nurture it and put it back into forest environments. So we're not just looking to wildcraft and harvest for profit. We're looking to garden in the forest and really do some planting along with our gathering.
Yeah, this journal has a lot of interesting things in it, including the United Plant Savers has a medicinal plant conservation certificate program. There's one in the fall and one in the spring. And this is with Chip Carroll. Chip has been down here a number of times, is really, really great about getting people excited about doing some growing of ginseng and golden seal. There's also new for this 2017-2018, a deep ecological artist fellowship program also coming out of that. And in this edition, spring 2007, is Mark Williams on page 37 is the 2016 Medicinal Plant Conservation Award recipient. Mark is doing great things. He be coming back from Costa Rica tomorrow, and he's teaching all over the place. That conservation award that he won in 2016, I won in 2009. And so it's nice to share that experience with Mark. And it's all through the United Plant Savers that we do that. Mark goes down to Costa Rica with United Plant Savers down there and does some really great stuff. And one of the things that we might talk about now is how you and I met, Peter. Why don't you explain your side of the coin on that?
All right. Well, I can say who we met through was Mr. Frank Cook, who was a teacher to many of us in the permaculture and herbal medicine community and just the community of life. He was an extraordinary herb teacher. He, I'll often say that he taught herbalism every day. If he didn't have a workshop scheduled, whoever was around him, he was ready to go on an herb walk and share all kinds of knowledge. He was a teacher of teachers, of herb teachers. And so he used to come through and visit when I was working with the Seeds of Change Farm in New Mexico and working on other agriculture projects. He would come through several times a year, and he introduced me to Robert on the phone as a source for ginseng, because we were doing work with OSHA up in the Rocky Mountains, which is another very rare and powerful medicinal plant. And so I contacted Robert to see if we could trade some ginseng for the OSHA. And I got an education right away in the value of native wild-grown American ginseng in comparison to what I thought was a very valuable, commercially valuable plant, OSHA. They do each have they're in a similar situation of endangeredness, but I guess the American ginseng was fetching a much higher price at that time. But we talked on the phone in 1998. And then when I first visited Western North Carolina in 99, Frank Cook picked me up from the airport in Charlotte and took me on a whirlwind tour of sustainable projects in Western North Carolina. And I believe the first stop was the was your farm there,
Eagle Feather.
The Eagle Feather Farm. And then we went to Earth Haven, and we went to Joe Hollis's. We went to Frank Forcinelli's farm. We went to a few other farms. I won't remember the names right now. But he took me on a whirlwind tour and was trying to lure me here starting in the late 90s. And that's how we ended up meeting, was through the illustrious Frank Cook.
Yes, Frank was a person who, when I moved here in 94, I met with him pretty much near that time of arrival, and we started, we put on a herbal conference one weekend, and we worked together on a number of projects for Eagle Feather and around. United Plant Savers was not really where Frank, he had other places to go. Mark Williams, who has taken over a lot of what Frank was doing, is he and United Plant Savers are on the same page. And they're working together, as I say, in Costa Rica. There was a number of places that Frank Cook went in Costa Rica that Mark joined him on, and Costa Rica is now a main place where they've had a lot of similar connections. Frank, if you want to look at his life, I have an hour segment on him on my YouTube channel, plants and their friends on YouTube. Now, I'm sorry, that's Plant Friends. One word, Plant Friends, at the end of youtube.com/Plant Friends. And one of the episodes, 6 or 7, I think, is a story of Frank Cook. Zeb Friedman was there, Mark Williams, I maybe was there, and Goodhart Brown was there. And it's one of the most viewed videos on Plant Friends that I have. So I would encourage you, if you don't know anything about Frank, that there's a lot of information about him out there now. You want to add something?
Well, yeah, I know Mark Williams has really carried on the work of Frank Cook, and I've been sitting there trying to think of the organization.
International Plant Healers is the a group that they, after his death, they formed in his name, and they're becoming bigger and bigger all over the place.
Yeah.
So I think...
It's plantsandhealers.com, I
yeah,
believe.
Yeah, plantsandhealers.org.
.org, okay.
Yeah.
Try both, but you'll end up with it. And
yeah, that's a good situation. Of, and he has also an online botany in a day. And that was started originally by Frank, and then was taken over by Mark. And the person who wrote it did a rewrite recently that Mark helped upgrade. And but he has, it's by donation, and it teaches people how to recognize plant communities so that you can have an understanding about where that plant comes from, and then zero down into what that specific plant is in that family and in that community.
Yeah, that's the book Botany in a Day by Thomas Epley.
Yeah, Thomas.
That Frank Cook, like you were saying, he was a big proponent of that book because it's the quickest, easiest way for a lay person to get knowledge of botany and to start to be able to key out plants. And like you're saying, they focus on the plant families so that you can start to see the relations between similar plants that are related. And that was part of the big work of Frank, was that, you know, for instance, ginseng becoming endangered. He was always looking for other plants and other species that could do similar work that and work well in the body the same way. And so to take the pressure off of ginseng. So he was a big proponent of the planetary herbalism that's always looking for similar plants that can do the same thing.
Right, and we had two of those as plants to be purchased at the ginseng auction. One was Siberian ginseng, and the other was Jayugalon. Mm-hmm. And both of those, Jayugalon has ginsenoside, similar to ginseng, it's just not as strong, not as potent. And Siberian ginseng gives you the same benefits of ginseng, although it's not a Panax. So, but those are some of the things. Also, with golden seal, Frank used to talk about some other alternatives, so take the pressure off of golden seal.
Yeah. Yep, he was a super committed herbalist and teacher. And yeah, anyone who doesn't know about Frank Cook, they need to know about him. He's kind of the Johnny Appleseed of the modern herb world. All the herb teachers I know were touched by Frank one way or another. He was committed all the time. So yeah, learn more about him at theplantsandhealers.org or .com, but we're going to guess .org on that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff around. I know that I was with Frank when he went to first South America, and then India, and then Africa to learn about plants. So he set up the groundwork for plants, international plants and healers, because he studied on these continents. And then he went to a university in England, where he learned about the new way of looking at of governance. So he was very forward in his looking at plants for their benefits and for their help as human beings.
Yeah. One of his goals in his travels, he wanted to meet representatives of every genus of plants. He wanted to meet every see and learn about every genus. So he had to travel all over the world, and he was on a mission to be able to become allies with each of the important medicinal plants. So he went to, had he, China? Had he gone to China yet?
No.
That was the last one that he wanted to go to
that they planned. Now, as it turns out, a student of Joe Hollis's is going to get Joe and Jim and Mark Williams over to China this year. They're planning on doing it. I think, personally, for me, the travel, I think, was something like 16 hours in the air, something like that. I don't think my body can really deal with it as well as people like Mark.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what Joe Hollis, how he fares with this trip. But that should be a pretty interesting trip, and I wouldn't doubt that Jim would be able to publish that trip as a very interesting thing. Right now, there's a lot of things happening in China. Of course, we know that at the turn of the century, Hong Kong, where all the ginseng goes every year, was taken over by the mainland. And then in that time frame, also there's a major outlet on the mainland in South China that Wisconsin ginseng is sold at. So a lot of things are happening going forward with the plants, and I'm happy that we are finally talking about forest farming. If you go to my website, www.ncgoldenseal.com, under media is a 1997, I think, article that is talking about farming in the woods, how I understood how the north-facing slope through Appalachia is a resource that we have shelved, come back and forested every 30 years, is not an answer. And if we try to go ahead and put these forest products on the market so that we can use them for our health, I think that we'll be a lot better off than relying on the chemicals coming out of Big Pharma. I want to alert everybody to the new plants that have come up yesterday that I found, including my trilliums are up, wild geraniums up, and trout lily is out. So I believe that the mushrooms...
which one?
The spring ones.
Chaga?
No, the little guys that stand up in the different colors.
Oh, the turkey tails?
No.
Yeah. Spring is on us.
Yeah.
All over. I was up in the forest yesterday, and lots of new things are popping. The geraniums are popping, and it's just starting to see the nettles in a little bit lower areas. But when, spring's upon us, and we've had these late cold storms that are just like, it's been start and go for the plants, but I think we're taking off now.
Okay. So this is Robert Itis and
Peter Waskevich
with Plants and Their Friends on WART 95.5 from downtown Marshall. We wish you a great day, and tune in to us on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock and on Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Have a great day.